It's the time of year when we're all thinking about goals and priorities. Now is the time to plan your next trip. Whatever kind of travel fills you up, whether it's lounging on the beach, connecting with family and friends, or going on a foreign adventure, Expedia has the tools you need to plan a great trip. Download the Expedia app or visit Expedia.com to start planning. You do need to be a One Key member to use price tracking. Signing up is easy and free. Expedia, made to travel. We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card, you call the number for help, and can't get a hold of anyone. If you only had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right, a real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'm Oprah Winfrey. Welcome to Super Soul Conversations, the podcast. I believe that one of the most valuable gifts you can give yourself is time, taking time to be more fully present. Your journey to become more inspired and connected to the deeper world around us starts right now.
Anne Lamott was born in 1954 to San Francisco intellectuals Kenneth and Dorothy Lamott. She was the middle child and their only girl. Her father, a writer, was raised in Tokyo to Christian missionaries. It was a religious upbringing that he found cold and unsupportive. So when he had a family of his own, he turned away from religion and God, encouraging Anne and her brothers to instead put their faith in books, in music, and nature. They were a family of non-believers, except for Anne. As early as age 5, she says, she secretly began to pray, believing in her heart that someone was listening.
I'm so happy that you're here. You know, you're a person I was so excited to meet. I actually followed on Twitter.
Oh, thank you.
I'm one of your followers.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I have been for like over a year now, I think.
Yeah. Yes. I just started last March, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now it's my life.
Now it's your life. You give really intelligent, thoughtful, writer-like tweets, I must say.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yes. Yeah. And also so happy to talk about this book, Help, Thanks, Wow. It's so interesting that so many of the teachers that have appeared on Super Soul Sunday come from parents who were atheists.
Yeah.
Your parents were too.
My parents were atheists. My mom was raised in Liverpool. She was actually baptized Church of England with her twin sister, and then she came over here, and she, I think, to have my father's love and respect, sort of renounced the belief of not just Christianity, but just a spiritual way of life. So I would take her to midnight mass on Christmas, and that was it.
Yeah,
but the good thing was I got to really find my own way.
Yes, but your parents were active atheists, not just, because a lot of people are sort of agnostic atheists, you know, but not fervently wanting their children to believe in absolutely nothing. And that's how you grew up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. My parents, I always thought they worshipped at like the Miles Davis Holiness Temple, you know, the Thelonious Monk Holiness Temple. The New York Times was a golden calf at which we bowed down. We worshiped. They were very, very left-wing, intellectual, very avant-garde, progressive.
Don't go anywhere. More to come after this short break.
No two travelers are exactly alike, and that means no two trips should be either. Texas' vast landscape of cultures, regions, destinations, and activities allow for an infinite number of different travel experiences. Are you a beach person? Well, you'll be having fun under the sun with Texas' 350 miles of coastline. If you're more of a rugged vacation type, there are campgrounds, hiking trails, and state parks galore. And foodies can't get enough of Texas' world-famous barbecue and Tex-Mex. Enjoy live music, visit internationally recognized art museums, and check out thrilling cowboy experiences. And now, Travel Texas offers a one-of-a-kind online trip builder that allows users to generate a custom, visually led trip matched to their unique interests. Visit traveltexas.com/get-your-own to get the only trip to Texas that matters, yours. That's traveltexas.com/get-your-own. Macy's Mother's Day gift guide has the perfect gift to make mom feel special. Shop by price, like 25 and under to 100 and under. Category, like fragrance, handbags, and more. Or gift lists, like for the mom who has everything, gifts that are already wrapped and ready to be gifted and for grandma. Get top gifts like Dolce & Gabbana Devotion Eau de Parfum, Coach Floral Printed Leather Cassie Crossbody Bag, and Le Creuset Shallot Dutch Oven. Shop at Macy's.com/giftfinder.
Like her parents, little Annie was bright, a good student, but the kids at school teased her relentlessly for her unruly hair and skinny build. A shy and sensitive child, she learned to fight back by making jokes. Writing gave her solace too, but by eighth grade, she says she turned to alcohol. Soon she was drinking regularly, saying it made her feel brilliant and attractive, like the best version of herself. At 19, she was hooked and began experimenting with cocaine, speed, and LSD.
Why did you start doing drugs? Why?
Well, I just love not to feel my feelings. And I think I probably have a predisposition. Uh-huh. I'm definitely so addictive. I was a very frightened and shy child. I was too smart and I was too sensitive and I was shy and I was funny looking. I got bullied horribly and I could hardly breathe. I always felt like everybody else had been given the owner's manual that one day in second grade when I was homesick, you know, and everybody else had the manual on how to have decent self-esteem and just enjoy yourself while you're here. I'd miss school that day. And I was scared and I was sad and I was odd. I was different. And when I drank, I didn't feel any of those things. I felt pretty. If I was too thin, I felt the right weight. If I was overweight, I felt thin. I felt whole. I could breathe again. Mm-hmm. I would drink and I loved it. And everyone loved me. I was, desperate people pleaser, desperate for people to approve of me, but doing very, very well in the world. But on the inside, it just felt like Swiss cheese, you know? And I had been raised to believe that what I was seeking was out there, that you could buy it, achieve it, lease it, date it, bring it home. And I didn't know that it was going to be an inside job. And I didn't have a little toolbox of how to find it on the inside. I only knew to do better and better and better.
So when you figured out that it was an inside job, how old were you?
I think I probably had just gotten sober because
that's a gradual coming, isn't it? When you finally
I still believe I can buy a date to achieve and lease it. And my default, it's like my base camp, is believing it's out there. And if I can just get you to think I'm the greatest person, if I can just get the main reviewer at the New York Times, it's going to be like the FDA seal of approval, and I'm going to have finally arrived. But then I go, oh, honey, that's okay. And we have a cup of tea, and I play with the dogs, and I go, it's an inside job, and I pray. And we'll pass.
I love the title of your book, Help, Thanks, Wow. You say that these are the three essential prayers. Tell me how you came to that.
Well, let's see. I got sober when I was 32. I had converted the year before.
Converted to?
To Christianity at this funny little integrated church in Marin City with about 40 people. So there was this sort of gap year where I came to church in not always excellent shape. But the thing was, they just welcomed me. They didn't, you know, they loved me. They didn't hassle me. They didn't want to make home visits, you know, which I would have run screaming for my cute little life. They didn't want me to learn anything. You know, they just let me be. When I first got sober, a lot of people would sort of remind me that we were walking prayers. We were miracles. We'd been fished out of the stream. And you go around saying, help me, please. I'm so doomed. It's all hopeless. And then you get a break. You get grace appears. You get a little bit of stamina you hadn't had, a little bit of second wind. And then you go, thank you, thank you, thank you. And then I realized that maybe 10 or 15 years ago that if you were stuck spiritually, that if you just went outside, if you looked around, if you looked up, you went, wow, you know? If it was nighttime and the stars were out, you don't step outside and go, well, wow, it's a medium starry night.
You step outside,
you go, wow.
Wow, yeah.
Holy cow. I just did it last night.
Yes. Yes.
But to me, the three essential prayers are help me. And then, oh, thank you, thank you. And then, whoa, or wow.
Wow. I love that you say prayer is taking a chance that against all odds and past history, we are loved and chosen.
We are loved and chosen.
Yeah. It's easy to thank God for life when things are going well, you say on page 44, but life is much bigger than we give it credit for, and much of the time, it's harder than we would like.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's very easy to see God here. It's very easy for me to see God in my backyard with the dogs and with the very bitter cat that I call my own. But when someone's sick, when you get the bad phone call, when someone's heard from the doctor, when the appearance of life is very, very shaky and seeming, it throws me completely off my game. It throws me for a loop. I think this can't be right.
And I know now you believe that we can pray anytime, anywhere.
Anytime, and you can say anything.
Yeah.
And I say to God sometimes, you have got to be kidding. Or I say, it would be so much skin off your nose to cut this person a little slack. And I think you can say anything. You can say, I'm mad at you, and I'm not going to be a good sport about it. How about that? And that's prayer. Silence can be prayer. Rage can be prayer. It's truth. It's all prayer. When we are talking to something that the rest of the world may not be seeing right that minute, we're talking from the deepest part of our heart, we're trying to tell the truth. That's prayer.
That's prayer. Why is it so important to not get bogged down in what or whom we are praying to? Because, you know, there are people who believe that if you only pray this way and if you only call it this, but why do you say that's not important?
Well, because I just don't think that this side of the grave we're really going to understand the mystery of God and grace. You know, we get little shards here and there, little bits of light. We know so little. We think we know so much. And to just use God as an acronym for life, for love, for good orderly direction.
I love that you called him Phil for so long.
I called him Phil because my favorite scripture is Philippians 4, 4 through 7. Rejoice in God. I say again, rejoice. Whatever's happening, say thank you, rejoice. So I was down in Mexico, and one of those guys, a vendor who writes your name on in embroidery, asked me my name, and I said, I want you to write Phil 4 through 7. He said, okay, but he got busted before he'd finished it, so it just said Phil. And I thought, that's a great name for God. So, but it also reminds me of 4 through 7, which just says, just rejoice.
Rejoice. Yeah. You say we could also call God Howard if you want to. You mentioned that in the book.
Yeah. Because people say, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Hallowed be thy name.
Yeah. I don't think God cares.
You know what? I so agree with you, Annie, because I can't imagine an omnipotent force that created all of this getting hung up on a name or title.
Right.
So,
or a position.
Or a position.
Or, you know, or all the people that...
Because omnipotence is the position.
Love is the position.
Yeah.
And Einstein says there's exactly one thing. It's called energy. Mass is energy.
Yeah.
Some of it's going really fast like light. Some of it's going really slow like a table.
Like
but
a
there's
table.
Only energy. Can't be created. Can't be destroyed. You're made of it. So I think it's some sort of love energy, you know, and I think I'm made of it. Think I'm made for it. Think I'm made... to be a part of something really huge that I'm never going to understand with my really limited human resources this side of the grave.
Yeah. Carolyn Mace told us on the show a while back that people confuse prayer with wishes. Can I have more stuff? Or where's my stuff? But that's not really prayer. What do you say about that? What's the difference between prayer and what we wish for?
Well, I think talking to God is prayer, and, you know, we kind of don't know what we're doing a lot of the time, which is what this book is about. You start where you are. You start where your butt is. Of course, you want certain things, or you wish certain things would unfold. But my pastor talks about that we live in the hope, not in the hope that we will get or that this will work out or that we'll find this. We live in the hope that love is true and that God is true and goodness is true and that the light shines in the darkness and the light has never been extinguished, not after Newtown, not after the tsunami in Sri Lanka. The light has not. We live in the hope that that is true. And when my best friend Pammy was dying 20 years ago, I said to a priest friend, I said, do you believe that God will catch her as she crosses over and her little daughter will be okay and will be loved and safe here without her and that I will see Pammy again? And he said, I hope so. And I never forgot that because we live in the hope.
In the hope.
In the hope of truth, in the hope of light, in the hope of spiritual healing. Because first of all, To hope makes you so vulnerable. I mean, if your heart is open, it's going to get bruised and knocked around the world, and life is going to knock you around. But to hope, it is to be a child again, and ye must become
a
little
children. To hope
is to
put yourself in the vulnerable space.
To hope is to be vulnerable, yes, again, instead of to go, you know, whatever. To be in armor is what the world teaches you to do, to have a strong surface, to have a shell. And when you're in hope, you're kind of like a snail between shells, and you're trying to get from a very bad, dark, scary place to where you can breathe, where you can get the sunlight on you, get the air on you, and we can be together, and we're going to be okay.
Going to be okay.
100% of the time, in my experience.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank. Something should be boring, like banking. Boring is safe and reliable. You don't want your bank to be entertaining. Entertaining is for podcasts with inspiring celebrity guests, not banks. PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life. PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865. Brilliantly boring since 1865 is the service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Inc. PNC Bank, National Association, member FDIC. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Stories should never be about us, without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
But what do you say to people, and I know you've been in these conversations, when terrible things happen, horrible things happen all the time in our country, in our lives and community, and people say, well, where was God?
Yeah.
Where was God in that? Where was God?
Well, you know, Mr. Rogers said was, look, his mother used to say, look to the helpers, look for the helpers, because that's where God is going to be. God didn't cause the tsunami. God didn't cause the shooter at Newtown to go crazy. The shooter at Newtown had mental illness, and there's 300 million guns in this country. But the God is in the help. God is in the healing. God is in the crying. The tears are going to bathe us. The tears are going to cleanse us. The tears are going to hydrate the ground at our feet. And who knows what's going to grow? The tears are the baptism. The baptism means, in an ecumenical sense, that yeah. You go under the water and you come out a different person.
And the reason why it always works is because help is the prayer of surrender.
Yes.
You say that.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
Exactly. Now, the other prayer that you use is thanks. Which I think there is no greater way to create abundance in your life than through being thankful for what you have right now.
Yeah, yeah. Life is just a phenomenon. To have been born is a miracle. What are
yes.
the odds?
Yes.
And to just go, wow, I don't get it, but thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the greatest lesson I got on thank you, or received on thank you, came from Maya Angelou. One day I was upset about something. Somebody had written something that wasn't true, and I was upset about something somebody had said, the tabloids were saying. And she said, stop right now and say thank you. Yeah. And I was like, but why would I say thank you? Because this is horrible and it's not true. And she would say thank you because you know that there's a rainbow in every cloud.
Yeah.
And wherever you are right now, you're going to come out on the other side of whatever it is, mm-hmm. and all you got to do is walk right through it. So say thank you right now for allowing me to walk to the other side. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that has been a great lesson
for me. When I pray, I say to God, thank you in advance for your tender mercies, and I'm living in the hope of that.
Yes.
And, you know, William Blake, the great, crazy, wonderful mystic, said, we are here to learn to endure the beams of love. And everything is opportunity to learn to endure the beams of love with strangers at airports, at the Department of Motor Vehicles. You know, if your heart is open, you start flirting with people. If you're a person who's here because you understand we're so hungry for giving, we're not hungry for getting, we're hungry for giving. So you start flirting in line at the DMV, people start responding, you create the love you weren't feeling, you create this energy, you get in a good mood, right?
And you get a better photo.
And you get a cuter photo. That's the most important thing, yeah.
That's true, because there's always an opportunity to let that through.
And to just learn to endure the beams of love. The culture tells you if you do well enough, if you achieve this, if you stop doing that, and if you really don't need quite so much of that, then, oh, so much love will come your way. And Blake says, no, we are immersed in it, and we learn to endure it, we breathe in it, and then we say, thank you.
Yes. And now let's get to wow.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. What makes you say wow?
Everything. I wake up in the morning and I say, wow, because for all those years when I was drinking, almost 20 years, I was not waking up in the morning going, wow. I was waking in the morning going, oh my God. Oh my God.
What did I do? Oh, what did I say?
God. Oh God, who's that? Do I know that person? How did it go last night? And then you have to call around to sort of see if people are still speaking to you. And so you don't wake up in the morning going, wow, life is just a phenomenon. And I wake up every single morning, and I can be in pain, and I say, wow, and I say, hi. You know, hi is really a huge prayer, too. I wake up, first thing I do in the morning is I say, hi. Hi, it's me. And I look around, I say, wow, my dogs are on the bed. I have, like, this much space usually to sleep in.
So I know,
I do,
too.
This tiny, cramped little space. And the dogs begin their healing ministry of love. I let the dogs, and I say, wow. I say, wow.
I love that. That is what it is, a healing ministry of love when they start their little morning thing and they want to be hugged and they were looking at you and all.
Right.
It's their healing ministry.
And they just look at you like, oh my God, I just love you so much. How are you? How are you? I kind of have to pee though, but I love you so much. How are you? Okay,
yes.
I know what. Let's all get up. Okay, I'm kind of hungry too. And you get up and you know what you're going to do that morning, but I say, wow. I woke up in Maui this morning and I went, wow. Oh my God, I went out on the beach, I went to church, and I said, thank you, I don't know how you got me here. Wow, what a trip. Wow, it also means, what a trip. Another way of saying it is, holy Toledo, oh my God, my mind is blown by the beauty, my mind is blown. You know, I notice every single bird, and I say, wow, and I stop, and if they're close by, I want to talk, I say, hi.
I notice every single butterfly.
I notice every single, I go, wow, oh my God. And
I notice every single bird because there are a lot of them around here, particularly in the evening, but
Yeah, and sometimes you say to a butterfly, look at you, like you would a little child with a great Pokemon t-shirt.
I just did, going up the mountain. There was a monarch yesterday morning and I'm saying, look at you.
Yeah, you say, oh my God, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Wow. I say, wow.
Yeah. Sam, when he was about 8, said the funniest thing. He said, Mom, he's always talked to me rather strictly. He says, Mom, I have figured out why people use to say the word God for God. And I said, oh, okay, what was that, honey? He goes, well, when you see something so beautiful and so amazing that you can't believe your eyes, you just go, God. I said, I started to say, maybe it's the other way. And then I said, yeah, I think you're right.
Yes.
So I think that's where you go, God.
When you wrote the book about what it was like to raise your son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Operating instructions.
Operating instructions. Yeah.
Known as the author who perfected the art of saying the unsayable, Ann certainly did that when she published the bestseller Operating Instructions. This raw and unflinching memoir documents the good, the bad, and everything in between during the first year of her life as a single mother to her beloved son, Sam. Ann's brutal honesty gave mothers everywhere permission to just be themselves.
When you wrote Operating Instructions, were you writing that as much for yourself as for everyone else?
No, I was writing it for myself.
You were writing it
for
yourself.
Because Sam's father, who he didn't meet for a few years, his best friend came over and was very excited that I was going to have a baby. And he gave me a leather journal. He gave me the gift of a leather journal. Ooh. And he said, I want you to write down a sentence every day, which is what I tell people. You've read my Twitters. You read my favorite. I say, write down a sentence every day.
Yes.
Just do it. Because God's given you a gift and you want to tell your story. And I wanted to tell the story of how Sam was given to me by God at the age of 35 years old. Started writing little by little, bird by bird, and I sent it to my agent and she said, and remember writing on paper? Remember that sacred scritchy sound of paper and pencil? Well, that was how I wrote it on these journal pages. And I'd tear them out and send them to my agent. She'd say, They're speckled with tears. She said, these pages, and she said, just keep doing it. She said to keep doing it. I did everything she ever said. So I kept doing it. But you know, if you tell the truth, it turns out to be universal. So I was saying all this outlandish stuff about being a mother, and I would tell people and they wouldn't go, well, that is just terrifying.
You're horrible. Yeah, they say, me too.
They go, me too.
Yeah.
Well, I remember once when I was going to India, and I don't travel well. I don't believe in the concept of flying, and I'm terrified.
I don't believe in it conceptually.
And I went up to the altar and I asked the people in my church to pray for me because I was getting on the plane the next day. And she said, you know, honey, when you get on an airplane, it's sort of too late to ask for beggy prayers. And she said, it's really time for trust and surrender.
What did you think of India? Have you ever experienced anything?
My mind was so blown.
Isn't it?
My mind was blown. I was just there for like 12 days and I loved it more than I could ever put into words. And I, you know, 1 billion people praying at the same time, 1 billion people in prayer, right?
Yes. What it felt like to me was that here is an entire nation of people who are living, breathing spirituality all the time. They are it. They exhibit it. They demonstrate it in everything. Yeah. They are
pure being. Yeah. And you feel that pulse, that vibrational pulse.
There's a vibrational thing.
And it's mind altering. It changes you. It's like baptism. You come back a different person.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And how did it change you?
It expands your perception. It's like a new pair of glasses. And I see everything differently now. You know, I see the poorest of the poor. I see the most destitute people on earth. And they're living in the hope that they will be provided for. They're living in the hope that people will see them and say, here is some rice. And they're living on the streets. They're getting each other up. And they're getting their kids ready for school.
I know.
And a little bit of food has come by.
Getting their kids ready for school. You know, we visit a family where their entire house was the size of from this chair to that.
Right.
And there are five people sleeping in the same room.
Right.
I shall never forget it. And there is a level of contentment. Mm-hmm. And order and harmony with the rest of the people.
And everybody's taking care of everybody else.
Whether in India or at home in California, Anne Lamott writes what she says is on her heart. So it makes sense that when she heard about the tragic shootings at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, she put pen to paper, hoping to give her readers that sense of order, harmony, and meaning during that time of such great loss.
Well, this whole show is about talking about the search for meaning. That's what we do on Super Soul Sunday, the search for meaning. And now you've written a book about the search for meaning.
Yes, I have. It's called Stitches, a handbook on meaning, hope, and repair. And I started the day after Newtown because I was beyond stunned. And I thought, where do you find meaning anymore? Where do you even start? And I've asked myself that a number of times over the years. Where do you even start?
It's interesting. I wasn't stunned by Newtown at all.
No.
You know why I wasn't stunned? I wasn't stunned because I started out as a young reporter in Baltimore. Mm. And I remember consciously being aware of Mothers Against Drunk Driving, that movement, and how it affected drunk driving and how hard it was to build momentum. And I remember as a young reporter going out to cover stories, an accident, and the assignment editor on the desk would say, you know, how many people injured? And, you know, the nature of news is that, oh, two people injured, well, okay, that will decide where it is in the lineup. Mm-hmm. Five people injured, seven people injured by a drunk driver coming from choir practice. Oh, that's going to be headline story. That's going to make the 6 o'clock headline. That'll be the 11 o'clock headline. And what I started to see was that it took seven children and a school bus driver who was drunk to really get people's attention before people would start to think. And so the second I heard about Newtown, I said, so that's what it took in order for people to stop and pay enough attention to have the conversation. I feel the same way about texting and driving. How many, there has to be a critical mass number of people harmed before people realize, oh, that's a bad thing. Maybe we shouldn't do that. But it got the country's attention. At least started the conversation in a way that we hadn't had it before.
Breaks your heart, but you know, the Leonard Cohen poem that there's cracks in everything, and that's how the light gets in. So a little bit of light got in, but and for that we're grateful.
Yes, and I love the parents, the Wheelers, who were on Capitol Hill and did that beautiful interview with Bill Moyers, who said, when they said, you know, we are not going to give up. And we are determined to use this moment in time to get people to sit and listen to people of different opinions, because we cannot continue to move forward unless we're willing to listen to each other.
Yeah.
And these are parents who lost their 6-year-old boy, mm-hmm. who can come to that kind of resolution and peace about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that willingness to show up and tell
the willingness
truth,
to show up and
no matter
tell the
that
truth.
It breaks their heart every time they say those same words.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. And so to write the book Stitches, about finding meaning in a world that produces Newtown, what is the answer?
The answer is always you start where you are, you start where your butt is, you start in the not knowing, you start in grief, you start in being speechless.
Yes.
You start in the silence, you start in the tears, you start in community, you gather together. The book is called Stitches because all you have to do when you start repairing something is know one place to start, one place in the torn fabric that will hold the knot. You start there. And so I thought metaphorically, you just need to know one place to start. And then you start, you find one place and you test it. Will it hold? It's torn, mm-hmm. but will it hold? If you fold it over, it'll hold. A stitch. I've brought in two pieces of fragment together. And I just keep going one day at a time.
What is your experience of God now? What is your experience of God?
I just feel him. I just feel him. You know, I always have said and written that I feel like the love of a dog is the closest we come to knowing divine love, this side of eternity, this side of the grave. And I just experience his companionship. I just feel God. I just feel that I am loved and chosen, and that he's my best friend, and that when the two of us are sitting right here, that there's three of us, and that we're made of that energy. We're made of Holy Spirit energy.
So you experience God in all things, all people? Do you see God in other people?
I see God in every person.
Do you believe in heaven and hell?
I do. Yeah, I don't believe in a hell of eternity because God is a God of love. I know hell. Mm-hmm. I know hell on earth.
So are you optimistic for where we are?
I am a very crabby optimist.
Yeah, yeah.
If I, again, were God's West Coast rep, I would have things work out better sooner. I would have a system that was more predictable.
Yeah.
And because grace
well, that's
does...
obviously not the way the world works now.
Well, I really
it used to be pretty predictable.
It used
I mean
to
in
be.
The 50s
yeah.
when yeah. you were born and I was born, it was pretty predictable.
The world was a lot safer.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure in the 50s you went to kids' houses, you'd go over at dusk. I could run down to your house. And
yeah.
now like you'd have to have armed guards, you know, at dusk to get children
you
safely
can't let
home.
Your children out
you
at dusk.
You don't let your children out at dusk.
No.
And we used to just get on our bikes and we would ride literally all day.
Oh, I remember that.
Remember that?
Yes.
It would be so good. And then you'd find a nickel and you go to the drugstore and buy a Hershey bar. And all day. You'd check in with your parents at dinner time.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
So I'm a crabby optimistic. I believe that when all is said and done, that love is sovereign here, that when my grandchild is 50-year-old's love will still be sovereign, and that grace will be sufficient for whatever appears in his life and in the greater reality of this earth. Grace will be sufficient.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You were Anne Lamott. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
What a pleasure to sit with you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for coming all this way. Grace will be sufficient. Grace will be sufficient.
I'm Oprah Winfrey, and you've been listening to Super Soul Conversations, the podcast. You can follow Super Soul on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me next week for another Super Soul Conversation. Thank you for listening.
A lot can happen between falling in love with a house online and owning it. Between imagining living there and breathing in your new home for the first time. Having an advocate who can help you navigate the complex world of financing, inspections, negotiating, analyzing the market, and talking through any anxieties that may pop up, that can make all the difference. That's what the expertise of a Realtor can do for you. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors and bound by a code of ethics. Because that's who we are.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.